WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, 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 what is up, beautiful people? It is one fantastic Tuesday here in mid-Michigan, and you are tuned in to WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We have a fantastic show in store for each and every one of you out there. We will talk about the Diamond Classic as Isaac Constance and I went out to Kircher Municipal Park yesterday to watch opening day of the Diamond Classic. We'll talk about the two teams that pulled out W's and will move on in this year's tournament. We'll also chat about Nike and Adidas bidding to be a part of the U of M Maize and Blue tradition for the upcoming year. We'll also have a special Top 5 Tuesday centered around the NBA Draft Lottery. What exactly are the top 5 needs for the Detroit Pistons? And folks, as we speak, a press conference is being held by the New England Patriots concerning, yeah, you know that word, Deflategate. What are the new developments in this whole case? We'll talk about that as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, without further ado, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 19th. All right, let's start with the Diamond Classic. The Division III number 9 ranked Lansing Catholic Cougars got an 8-1 victory over DeWitt at Kircher Municipal Park on the opening day for the Diamond Classic. The win sends Lansing Catholic to Thursday's quarterfinal against Grand Ledge, and will be a matchup of the last two teams to win the Classic. Grand Ledge has won the tournament 5 of the last 6 years, which includes last season. Now, Lansing Catholic won the Classic back in 2013. In Game 2, the Hazlet Vikings, they piled on a 16-1 win over Portland St. Pat's. The Vikings move on to face CAAC Red rival St. John's in a Classic quarterfinal, which will take place also on Thursday. All right, and today at Rainey Park, the Softball Classic semifinals take place. Holt faces Eden Rapids at 4 p.m., and St. John's takes on Lakewood at 6 p.m. The San Francisco 49ers announced they have signed cornerback Mylon Hicks to a 3-year deal and offensive lineman Justin Renfro to a 2-year deal. Now, Hicks is an undrafted rookie out of Michigan State University. He saw action in 32 games for the Spartans, including 9 games in 2014, when he registered a career-high 19 tackles, 4 passes defensed, and 1 sack last year. While at MSU, Hicks spent time at cornerback, safety, and linebacker, finishing his career with 27 tackles, 4 passes defensed, and 1 sack. All right, Adidas and Nike, they are competing. When are they not, right, folks? But they are competing for the right to produce for student-athletes and sell official U of M gear. An Adidas spokesman confirmed they are in the running and created a giant banner for the Maize and Blue contingent at their headquarters in Eugene, Oregon. Now, Nike, which reportedly painted an area of this complex also in Oregon, liked the field at the Big House. They confirmed they also hosted a group from Ann Arbor recently. U of M's current deal ends next summer. All right, Carlos Gomez, he led off the game with a home run and added a tie-breaking single in the 7th inning to lift the Milwaukee Brewers to a 3-2 victory over the Detroit Tigers on Monday night. Detroit's Justin Verlander, who of course is still battling through that trained triceps, he actually threw a 45-pitch bullpen session before Monday's game. And Bruce Rondon threw 25 pitches. Of course, Bruce is battling through a biceps tendonitis. Now, Detroit's Anibal Sanchez takes the mound today against Milwaukee's Jimmy Nelson. All right, folks, the NBA is holding its annual draft lottery drawing in New York City tonight at 8:30 p.m. on ESPN, when 14 teams will vie for the number 1 overall pick. Now, once the ping pong balls fall, Kentucky's Carl Anthony Towns, Duke's Jahil Okafor, and the rest of the 2015 draft class will officially begin the process of finding out where they will begin their professional careers. That should be an exciting thing. And of course, today's Top 5 Tuesday is centered on the Detroit Pistons. What are the top 5 needs for the Pistons looking at next year? All right, Tyler Johnson scored shorthanded, even strength, and on the power play in tallying the first hat trick in Lightning playoff history, and Tampa Bay got its highest-scoring offense in gear and even the Eastern Conference Finals with a 6-2 victory over the New York Rangers on Monday night. Chicago and Anaheim, they hit the ice tonight as the Blackhawks try to even that series. The NFL and the New England Patriots are engaged in back-channel conversations to see whether the two sides can resolve their differences without an appeal or possible litigation after the league's Deflategate punishment, sources told ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter. Now, the Patriots are weighing their next move in terms of reacting to the discipline meted out by the NFL and have until before Friday to file an appeal of their penalties, which consist of the loss of two draft picks, including a first rounder and a $1 million fine. Patriots owner Robert Kraft is currently addressing the media as we speak regarding Deflategate. We'll bring you an update on that press conference in just a sec. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even shoot me a tweet at Al Martin WKER. So without further ado, it is time to start the show. All right, ladies and gents, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Happy Tuesday. It is May 19th, 2015, and hopefully you're all having a great one out there. We've got a busy show today, filled with a ton of discussion. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before we start this party, I want to invite, of course, the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing, my man?
Doing well, Al. Caught up on the Game of Thrones episodes last night.
You did! You caught up, so you're all the way caught up when it comes to Game of Thrones on HBO.
I'm finally caught up.
You Gosh. Are the man.
It
you
feels
know what?
Good.
Yeah, it's a fantastic series. Actually, my favorite television show out there. And, hey, you can thank me, man. I shot you my HBO Go account.
I do thank you, yeah.
That's a real friend, okay, folks?
It is.
Gotta love that. But, yeah, you know, and actually, you and I, we're out at Kircher Municipal Park covering yesterday's Diamond Classic. You know, I tell you what, Isaac, this is one of my favorite high school sporting events to cover in the area simply because it brings out the community. Of course, we saw the stands were pretty much packed yesterday. As day one took place. And it was a fantastic day. 80 degrees. Of course, there was a bit of a rain delay during the first game between Lansing Catholic and DeWitt. But other than that, I mean, it was a fantastic day for baseball. We were out there. Of course, you got a chance to meet some of the local other television personalities in the area, like Jamie Curris, of course, of WILX-TV. My former boss, Fred Heumann, was also out there. Just a fantastic day for baseball. And, you know, it's so interesting going out each and every year because, again, the you can just feel the buzz around each and every Diamond Classic because of the dominance that one team in particular usually has each and every year, and that being the Grand Ledge Comets. Now, as I mentioned in our current sports quick hit headliners, I mean, the dominance of Grand Ledge is really quite eye-popping. They have won 5 of the last 6 years. Pat O'Keefe and his year-round system that he implements in the game of baseball is truly phenomenal. And this year, you know, of success was, of course, just like any other year for Grand Ledge. 8-2-1 this season thus far. That's according to Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal. They were actually swept by Lansing Catholic, though, earlier this month. So with Lansing Catholic's 8-1 convincing victory over DeWitt, they will move on to take on Grand Ledge in the quarterfinals this Thursday, which should certainly be a very intriguing matchup, to say the least. Now, of course, we were out there for both games, caught the entirety of the first game and caught just a brief stint of the second game. Here is actually Lansing Catholic head coach Andrew Smith on the win and, of course, on playing Grand Ledge, the powerhouse that is Grand Ledge, in the Diamond Classic quarterfinals.
It feels great. There's a lot of pressure, you know, the first time in front of the Diamond Classic crowd and this sort of thing to open up the tournament, but it was great to see our guys come out and play a great ball game.
How nerve-wracking is it for you? I mean, to play in these one-and-done type of tourneys like the Diamond Classic, I mean, you have to be pulling your hair out a little bit going through these things, right?
Yeah, it's always tough because, you know, baseball's a weird sport, and one-and-done tournaments are always unpredictable, but we just try to, you know, take the same approach and play a good ballgame.
8-1 win over DeWitt here. I mean, were you expecting a win like this? I don't think you were expecting one. I mean, because DeWitt is still a gritty team. I mean, how surprised were you from your club and the way to perform today?
I thought we got a great performance from our pitcher on the mound. I know DeWitt's a great hitting ball club, and they put up some runs on us this Saturday when we played, so I was really pleased with the performance we got defensively, and the bats showed up today, so yeah, it was great.
What did you learn this past Saturday that kind of helped you guys today?
I think it was just a confidence builder. Seeing we were able to take the first game, and then game two, they definitely got around on us and beat us pretty good. So we knew we had to play our best ball game to win, and we came and did that.
What's the message going to be to this team as you guys move on now?
The message is the same as it was today. We got to play a great ball game to beat a great team, but we've got to worry about ourselves and control the things we can control. And if we do that, then I think I like our chances.
Again, that was Lansing Catholic head coach Andrew Smith talking with myself after that win, that 8-1 victory over DeWitt in the opening day for the Diamond Classic. And yeah, you know, looking at, you know, who they play next now, I mean, certainly a tall order. But again, as I mentioned to start this whole rift here, again, according to Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal, Grand Ledge actually swept by Lansing Catholic earlier this month. So, you know, and a fantastic win for Lansing Catholic. Anytime you're talking about a one game elimination tournament in any sport, momentum holds a lot of weight, folks. And this is exactly the kind of start that you want if you are Lansing Catholic. A convincing victory, 8-1 win that does a lot for your psyche, does a lot for your confidence moving on. And confidence and psyche are two big, 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 big things when going against the powerhouse of Pat O'Keefe and Grand Ledge. And, you know, they also have experience to draw from, the past to draw from, seeing as though they did sweep Grand Ledge earlier this month. That's got to be also a big confidence getter. So I do think that Lansing Catholic, hey, I tell you what, this is something that could bode well for them moving on in the quarterfinals, and they could prove to be a very dangerous team that I think could knock off Grand Ledge. I mean, folks, we're talking about a one-game elimination here. All they need to do is just have another hot day. And, hey, we could be talking about Grand Ledge to be out of this whole thing. But who knows? That's why you play the game, right? Now, Lansing Catholic actually went 12-8 this year. They were actually riding a 5-game win streak into the Classic. Interesting stuff. So you talk about momentum. And Isaac, this being your first time, your first day out at the Diamond Classic, I mean, what are your takeaways from day one, my man?
Well, Al, when we talk about Lansing Catholic, what you have to remember is every day in baseball is a different day. Because we actually were talking to a parent, and DeWitt and Lansing Catholic split the series earlier this year. So although Lansing Catholic beat Grand Ledge in both games, I still think you have to favor Grand Ledge in the game just because of experience. But what a great event. All of the people that turned out I mean, shout out to them, because this really is a special baseball event for the community of Lansing and mid-Michigan in general.
I tell you what, Isaac, it's one of my favorite tournaments to cover. It's one of my favorite events in high school sports to cover, and all of the sports I cover. I mean, I always look forward to the Diamond Classic because these kids certainly bring it. Now, in the second game, of course, we left a bit early in that one, Isaac, but Hazlitt and Portland St. Pat's. Now, that was just a complete romping, at the hands in favor of the Hazlitt Hazlitt Vikings. Again, a 16-1 win over Portland St. Pat's. And, you know, it's interesting because actually reading the article here from that game, it's interesting because the umps and Hazlitt began packing up things early, thinking that the mercy rule had gone into effect earlier than expected. And, you know, to really just give the Vikings the victory over Portland St. Pat's. But the scoreboard actually was wrong, and it had given Hazlitt an extra run. So the umps are walking off, and then all of a sudden they had to get called back to the field and play then resume. It's kind of a weird moment that both coaches admitted afterwards they've never seen before in the game. So kind of an error there. But again, you know, and looking at, you know, again, 16-1 win, a very convincing victory at the hands of the Hazlitt Vikings. But you also have to take this in consideration as well, which I didn't know. But Portland St. Pat's was shorthanded on Monday and played without its starting catcher and center fielder. I'm not trying to give any excuses here, but again, I think this should be duly noted in this. It also held back its top pitchers because of a doubleheader on Tuesday against Powamo Westphalia that will decide the C-MAC title. So they're in preparation trying to compete for a league championship and felt as though, okay, we'll rest our stars, our top pitchers in this game because we have some other, I guess you could say, some bigger fish to fry. But, you know, when looking at a tournament like the Diamond Classic, I mean, I would guess that if the committee would have known that Portland St. Pat's was going to play that card, I don't know if they would have put them in this tournament, Isaac. I don't know. Maybe it's just me talking here because a lot of the chatter and a lot of the, you know, the disappointment from local baseball fans and more specifically, the school of Eden Rapids was that they deserved to be in this year's Diamond Classic. And again, difficult selection process. A lot of great teams in this year's Classic, including Portland St. Pat's. Again, they're competing for a league championship for that, for goodness sake. But Eden Rapids last week, it kind of blows my mind because last week, Isaac, Eden Rapids was ranked number one in Division II in the entire state rankings, but were left out. They went 17-4 for the year. They are 2-3-1 against teams in the field and 4-4 in the CAAC White. I my jaw was on the floor when that bracket came out, when the seedings came out, and saw that Eden Rapids was not in that tournament. So if Portland St. Pat's, again, they were shorthanded Monday, played without their starting catcher and center fielder. They also held back their top pitchers because of a doubleheader on Tuesday against PW that will decide the C-MAC title. I don't know. I just think that diving into the heads of the committee, if they would have known that was going to be the case, I think they might have given the bid to Eden Rapids. I don't know.
Well, we talk about it, and Eden Rapids did deserve it, without a doubt. Like you said, number one in Division II last week, and St. Patrick's, that's got to be a question that the committee asked the school, saying, you know, you're playing for that championship. Are you going to withhold a few players? Because otherwise, they do have other teams that they can and they should invite, such as Eden Rapids. So that's a decision that St. Patrick's has to make, and either the community or the committee, or the school needs to step up and say, listen, we might rest a few players in case you want to change your decision.
Yeah, because I think the big question here is this fair to the tournament? You know, because you want to be competitive at the end of the day, and 16-1 certainly isn't competitive by any stretch of the imagination. Now, I understand that, you know, maybe at the end of the day, I mean, it was a better matchup. You know, clearly Hazlitt was just the better team here. But seeing as though in reading the fact that Portland St. Pat's rested some of its star players, I mean, at the end of the day, if not going to be competitive, why be in the tournament at all? You know what I mean? So I get it, though. I definitely get it. I get kind of both sides here. I want to know what the public perception is. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Also, I'm seeing some breaking news here. Of course, we told you guys that we would update you concerning what was going on with the Patriots press conference and owner of the New England Patriots, Robert Kraft, as he is addressing the media as we speak. And I'm seeing here on my ESPN application on my phone that breaking news, Patriots owner Robert Kraft will not appeal Deflategate penalties against the team. I think they left out the there. And Tom Brady's appeal will be separate. So right now they will not appeal the Deflategate penalties against the New England Patriots team. So they're not appealing, I guess, the NFL snatching away the draft picks and the $1 million fine. But Tom Brady's appeal will be separate. So I still think that Isaac, to let the cat out the bag, of course, we'll be discussing this later on in the show. But I do think that the NFL is going to soften the blow when it comes to Tom Brady. I don't think he's getting those four games. If I had to guess, I think at the most, Tom Brady will get two games. He will sit out two games, and I think that's it.
I'm on the same boat. I think whenever we go to appeals processes, it seems like every single time the sentence gets shortened.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, these players can afford to hire good, expensive lawyers, and they do their job.
Right, exactly. So again, breaking news, folks. Again, the Patriots will not appeal Deflategate penalties against the team itself. Tom Brady's appeal is separate. So again, we will give you more developments throughout the hour as the official news comes in. And also, Isaac, before we hit our first break, I also want to bring up this, going back to the Diamond Classic, I had to get this off my chest because I do think that this is a problem in the game of baseball at all levels because, you know, I always bring up the stories, and I feel like I rant about this each and every year, but I just have to get it off my chest because it's so disheartening as a sports fan to see this every year. You know, I always talk about how growing up, I'm a big basketball guy. I grew up playing pickup basketball. I actually grew up on the west side of Detroit, right off of Joy Road in Granville. And right across the street, actually, was a charter school by the name of St. Suzanne. I actually went there before they converted it into a charter school. I went there during my I think like kindergarten through third grade. And it was right across the street from where I live, still is. When talking about my childhood home where I grew up at, and right across the street, I remember when they were redoing everything, they actually built an outdoor basketball court, fully paved, brand new baskets, metal rims. You know, it was absolutely beautiful. And the community would come out, you know, when the weather would start to break. And I remember all summer around this time of the year, just about every single day, I used to go over there with my buddies and we would play outdoor pickup basketball. You know, some of the most cherished memories of my childhood. Now, and it was so funny because, again, that's when I had the big dream of going to the NBA. I would play in my backyard. I had a hoop. Actually, this is old school, right? You never really see this anymore. But I had a basketball hoop nailed to my garage. My dad had measured it to be 10 feet. You never see basketball hoops nailed to the garage anymore, Isaac. You always see the pull-out rims now, the breakaway pull-out rims. Did you have a breakaway rim?
I actually had a basketball nailed to the garage.
On the garage. You barely see that nowadays, though, don't you?
You do, yeah.
It's a rarity now, but I actually had mine nailed to the garage, and, you know, I would practice in the backyard and then go across the street and sort of test my moves that I learned in the backyard on the local competition within the community. And, you know, those were cherished memories of my childhood, but I always will remember, I mean, after, you know, days and hours, you know, spent out in the basketball court, you know, I would go see my grandparents on the weekend during the summertime, and they would tell me of how back in the day, pickup basketball wasn't the thing. The big thing was pickup baseball. Yeah, I mean, kids would go out, you know, grab their bats and mittens and go out and play pickup baseball from the time the sun came up till the time it went down and the streetlights came on. I mean, just cherished memories that my grandma, you know, still tells me to this day. And, you know, in the African-American community today, Isaac, and this is what we brought up, you know, in between, you know, after that first game was finished and, you know, and the second game was about to take place at yesterday's Diamond Classic, and I was sharing that story to you, and it's just so disheartening to me that in the African-American community, they don't play baseball. We don't play baseball anymore. And, you know, basketball and football have become the thing now. And it's so disheartening because year after year after year, you see the numbers when it comes to African Americans in Major League Baseball continually drop. Continually drop, folks. And you know, and looking at the schools here in the area, the Lansing area. Of course, we know Lansing Everett, Lansing Eastern, schools that are predominantly African American. And their baseball teams, I mean, I don't know if you looked at the records of those three schools in particular when it comes to baseball, Isaac, but they're not good. Not good at all. I mean, some of the more preeminent schools in the Michigan area, like a Grand Ledge, like a Lansing Catholic, like a DeWitt. I mean, they look at the end of that, I'm pretty sure this goes through their head when they look at Lansing Everett on the schedule. They kind of look at that as a walk in the park when they're playing those schools. And it's because African Americans don't play baseball like they used to. Therefore, when they do play other schools, they get their butt kicked. And I really am hanging on for hope when it comes to blacks in baseball. But right now, something's got to give, or else we will see those numbers continually drop. It's just disheartening for me. It really is.
Yeah, I think part of the equation is just that baseball is losing national popularity in general. Mm-hmm. We see every year the numbers of boring Monday night football games surpass those of people that watch the World Series.
Exactly.
It is disheartening because baseball is an American tradition. You and I were talking. It's got the best tradition, the best aura, the best feel of any game there is to go to. Mm-hmm. You go to a basketball game, you chant, defense. Defense. Okay, that's every single arena in the United States. Football is also great. Football is very good, but it's got some dangers associated with it, and I wouldn't let my son play football. Mm-hmm. Really, I would not.
Right.
Baseball is relatively safe. I mean, it takes a lot of, I say chance, but I mean,
Because you got your fastballs that could come and whiz by your head and all that. But compared to other sports, yeah, it's relatively safe.
Yeah, and it's got such great tradition. It's very American. It's something you can only play in a few countries in the world. And there's something special about baseball, and I'm sorry to see it going. And
yeah, but the thing about it is that the attention span of our youth today is so short. Baseball games are just boring to watch. At the end, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, sometimes watching, I don't really start getting involved and really paying attention to the entire scheme of baseball and Major League Baseball until around October, until the playoffs. And of course, if a Tigers game is on, of course, we got to talk about Tigers here on the show. I'm watching a Tigers game. But other than that, I mean, I'm not keeping an even keel. You know, I'm not keeping my ear close to the grindstone throughout an entire MLB season, which entirely is too long in my opinion. But at the same time, that's why you're starting to see these pace of play rules come into effect, because they're trying to speed up the game. They're trying to make it more exciting. But I just don't think that, you know, a few pace of play rules are going to do that. And that's why our youth today, they just think it's boring at the end of the day to watch. Well, now, being at a baseball game and watching it at a baseball arena is totally different than watching it on TV. It's not fun to watch on TV, again, unless it's the playoffs, unless you're talking about a series where there are immense implications. But going at a baseball game is certainly fun because, as you just mentioned, the tradition behind it, the unbelievable venues that are in baseball, it has such a rich tradition, and it's America's pastime.
Wow, as I gave that long eulogy for baseball, still, myself, as a 19-year-old kid, I don't watch baseball. You're right. It's too boring. I'm not going to spend 4 hours of my day camped in front of a TV watching 18 or 20 commercial breaks.
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
know, I'm just not going to do that.
And some of those games end up like, you know, a 1-2 or 2-1 win, you know what I mean, for a team. And it's like you're going inning by inning with no scoring. Now the diehard baseball fan will appreciate that because they appreciate good pitching and all that kind of stuff. But that takes time to develop. That type of fandom takes time to develop, and if you don't have it early on, it's pretty rare that you're automatically just going to be tuned into the game like that.
I agree. And what you and I were talking about yesterday for a possible solution is baseball needs to regain that pickup culture where you just hit the ball with some friends, you know, just walk down to the neighborhood corner, hit the ball with some friends, just like basketball has right now. I think basketball is gaining popularity immensely because of that, because you can just go to any hoop and they're all over the county or the city.
Right.
You know, you've got one walking distance no matter where you live. Baseball, you don't have those baseball fields everywhere, and baseball needs to do a better job of encouraging kids to just pick up and play.
Yeah, that's true. And if that doesn't happen, I think the game will continue to be effective negatively when it comes to our youth and, of course, in the African-American community. Because I think the percentage of African-Americans that play baseball now in the MLB is something near like 5 or 6% right now. And it's crazy because I read a report on it. Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel did an amazing feature on it. They actually even had comedian Chris Rock address why African-Americans are not playing the game of baseball. And as silly as Chris Rock is, he made some very, very compelling points. And one of the biggest points, before we hit the break here, Isaac, is that, you know, kids, you know, the thing about baseball, I mean, excuse me, the thing about basketball is all you need is a basketball and you just go to a local open court and just got you can play with 5-10 people, you know what I mean? And, you know, it's easy. It's cost effective. But don't tell me that the game of baseball is too expensive to purchase bats and mittens for and to go out and go out and play. Don't tell me that it's not cost effective when I see kids just about every single month, or even every single like 2 weeks for that matter, go and sit in long lines to grab the next pair of LeBron James or Michael Jordan shoes. Don't give me that. That money could easily go to purchase a baseball mitt or a baseball bat. Come on, folks. I'm hoping for it. I'm rooting for it. But, you know, something's got to give pretty soon. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will have Top 5 Tuesday for you. Of course, the NBA Draft Lottery takes place tonight at 8:30 p.m. What exactly are the top 5 needs for the Detroit Pistons looking at next season? We'll be right back, folks. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Of course, I am your host, Al Martin, on this fantastic Tuesday, May 19th. And of course, I have to remind you all that, hey, we tape Current Sports TV tomorrow. That's right. I'll be sitting down with the head coach of the Lansing Community College. I'm still in Diamond Classic mode here, Isaac. The Lansing Community College men's basketball head coach, Mike Ingram. Mike had one fantastic year under the helm of the LCC men's basketball program, being named Conference Coach of the Year. Incredible year for this team. So I'll be chatting with Mike tomorrow. Now, again, for the spring and summer months, we have moved our usual Wednesday Current Sports TV production time from 6 p.m. We've moved it up 3 hours to 3 p.m., folks. So tomorrow at 3 p.m., I'll be sitting down and chatting with the one, the only Mike Ingram. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, all you have to do is simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. And then it's just a matter of showing up to our Current Sports TV studio right here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building on the campus of Michigan State University. Folks, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to our phone lines right now. On line one, we have our always enthusiastic, always informative caller, my man Ray. How you doing, Ray, and welcome to Current Sports?
Yeah, long time no here.
You the man. You the man. I'm glad you called in, Ray. How you doing, buddy?
I'm pretty good. I just got done with my job 5 miles, so I just thought I'd give you a buzz real quick. Hey, you know, I haven't talked to you in a while. You know, Jim Harbaugh, you know, wherever he's went, he's wore out his welcome pretty after 2 or 3 years. And I can see what's going to happen in Michigan. He's going to turn that program around.
Mm-hmm.
He's already got 4 secondary violations. He brung in a quarterback out of Iowa, a cornerback out of Stanford. He's going around and getting all these guys that are in a fifth-year senior and bringing them to school.
Mm-hmm.
It's legal what he's doing, but he's got some secondary violations already. He's got a buddy down there. I think he went out and got drunk because he knew that
right.
It's going to be hard to turn the program around.
That's the reason why, huh? Well, I tell you what.
They tied on a good one, I guess, him and Harbaugh, you know, down there. They're nothing but liars and puppets down there.
Well, first off, to address the secondary violations, I gotta be honest, Ray here. I think the Jim Harbaugh, I mean, when you look at these secondary violations, again, all four of the self-reported violations, they were first off how they were obtained was from the Freedom of Information request. I think MLive actually broke this story. And and looking at some of the violations, I just feel as though they weren't big things. Again, they were secondary. That's the reason why Michigan wasn't punished for them. I think they are violations that, I think other schools partake in or have been caught doing. But again, you talk about them. I mean, looking at, March 18th, for instance, Jim Harbaugh sending an autographed team helmet and jersey to an auction organized by a former high school classmate of his to benefit suicide prevention and awareness. Now, again, these items were auctioned and ended up being used to assist a scholarship fund. That's a violation. You can't do that. So, again, when you look at these things, I mean, Jim Harbaugh, just for that instance exactly, Jim Harbaugh's heart was in the right place. Again, he just didn't know that the memorabilia was going to be auctioned off for a specific purpose that, again, went against the NCAA.
Hey, Al.
Yeah.
When's the last time you ever seen Michigan go to other schools and tell them, hey, you can come and play right now. You're in a fifth year. Why don't you come to Michigan and leave Stanford or Iowa?
Yeah, but they're trying to win. I mean, I think Jim Harbaugh knows the position that this program is in.
I understand that, but I don't remember Michigan ever doing that. You know why they had to do that? Their recruiting class was terrible last year.
Right, exactly. It speaks volumes to the state of this program, which has been down in the dumps for what, 4 to 5 years now?
About 8 years.
Yeah, I think that Jim Harbaugh understands the situation and the cards that he's dealt, and he is doing whatever he has to do to make sure that his team is competitive next year. I respect that. I respect Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, I'm just saying, everywhere he's went, Stanford and the 49ers, after the third or fourth year, he wears out his welcome to the places.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep an eye on that. I think that might be another trend to worry about if you're a Michigan fan.
Yeah, and I think that, when that's exactly what's been said about Jim in his past, is that, he's so uber competitive, he's so ultra intense that sometimes, he does wear out his welcome. I mean, players get tired of that, and they say, okay, Jim's just blowing steam here. We're really getting tired of this guy. And it's interesting. I don't know if you saw. Did you see the HBO piece that was done on Jim Harbaugh exactly, Ray?
What's that?
Did you get a chance to see the HBO sports
piece? No, I didn't hear. But I heard something about your buddy, Tom. I didn't see any of that.
It was fantastic. And Jim Harbaugh, one of his former players, I can't remember who the player was, but he talks about that very thing. I mean, Jim Harbaugh wearing out his welcome. And again, he talked about how when Jim first got there, it was great. I mean, he's motivating you. You're getting pumped up for him. You want to run through a wall. But again, as time goes on, I mean, that his personality was just too intense. And at the end of the day, he wanted to just punch Jim Harbaugh in the face. And he was kind of glad that he left. So,
The 49ers have had like four of their top players retire. You gotta admit one thing. I don't think those guys would all retire if the 49ers would have kept him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But hey, one other thing, that basketball guy from Fort Wayne up here, your top center you got, how come he decommitted, and where do you end up going, to Purdue?
That's what's being predicted as to where he will go. Now,
why did he really want to leave state?
As far as why he decommitted, he has not come out. So I don't want to put words in Caleb Swanigan's mouth, but he hasn't come out and exactly said why he decommitted from Michigan State. Of course, there's speculation left and right as to why he did. Many feeling as though that he has other people in his ear pulling the strings for him. And I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. Who knows? But I could certainly see that because, again, I just feel as though recruiting over the years has caused a lot of people to get involved that really don't need to be involved. At the end of the day, this is the kid's decision. I feel as though he probably had maybe his parents in his ear, maybe some family members saying, why go to Michigan State? Why don't you go here? You know, and I think that may have been the reason why he decommitted. But again, Caleb Swanigan has not come out and said officially why he decommitted from Michigan State. I don't know if he ever will, to be honest.
Hey, didn't John Beilein get a top recruit the other day in basketball?
I believe so. He did. Isaac, can we look that up?
What position does he play?
I am not sure. I have to look that up for you. But I think we had in our Quicken headliners not too long ago. Ray, I have to look that up for you.
Yeah, I was just wondering, who do you think's the favorite for the Big Ten basketball next year?
Oh, boy, that's a good question, because when you look at it across the board, there are going to be a lot of competitive teams, including U of M. I think they're going to have a really nice squad next season. But don't forget about Maryland. Of course, you got Melo Trimble returning. He's going to be a fantastic player for Maryland. That team is going to be competitive. How about, you know, Minnesota? I think that's another team that's going to be very, very good. I mean, how about A.J. Hammonds and Isaac Haas? I don't know. It's going to be very – for me to come out and say this team is going to be your Big Ten favorite, whatever team I said, I mean, there are other teams – there are about three or four other teams you can make a strong case for.
What about Michigan State and Indiana?
Yeah, I'd like both of them as well. I think that Michigan State, I mean, looking at, you know, the class that they have coming in, I mean, my goodness, they're going to be stacked. Yeah, I mean, and Tom Izzo – I mean, just imagine what Tom Izzo was able to do with this squad this year that many people felt as though – wouldn't even get out of the first weekend of the NCAA tourney. This year's team is going to be better than last year's team was, right? Just imagine what Tom is going to be able to do with that group.
But what about football now? Michigan's got to play at Utah. What are their other non-conference games this year?
I have to look up the schedule, Ray.
I don't have a schedule in front of me either. I was just wondering if they were playing anybody tough besides Utah. They have to open at Utah. But I don't know what their other games, because they took Notre Dame off the schedule. You know, Notre Dame didn't want to play them anymore.
Yeah, well, we're looking at it. They have Western Michigan. That'll be the first game on September 4th. They play Oregon. That's going to be a big, 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 big game.
Michigan plays Oregon?
I'm talking about Michigan State's schedule here, Ray. You're talking about Michigan's schedule.
About Michigan's, too. They play at Utah, but who else do they play? Michigan State plays Oregon at home, right?
Let me see here.
Because they played at Oregon.
That's at home. Yeah, it's at home.
It's got to be at home. So what teams does Michigan play a non-conference besides?
You got Utah, Oregon State, UNLV, Brigham Young.
Oh, okay. You Oregon State and Brigham Young, you never know about them.
Yeah,
They can be pretty good sometimes. But
exactly.
So who do you have? I know Ohio State probably the big favorite, right?
Yeah. I mean, national champs. You can't argue with Urban Meyer. Michigan actually plays them the last game of the Big Ten regular season. That's going to be on November 28th.
Yeah, they got three top quarterbacks.
Yeah,
coming back. I don't know how they're going to make them all happy.
Right. Exactly.
I was surprised one of them, two of them didn't leave.
Yeah, that's going to be certainly. I mean, we talk about Cardale Jones, Braxton Miller. Yeah, he's staying. Braxton Miller staying as well. That's going to be quite the situation. What about JT Barrett? I think I thought one of them transferred.
No, I don't think so.
Thought they did, but they didn't, I don't think.
JT Barrett, Braxton Miller, and, of course, Cardale Jones all returning. That's going to be a win. Something's got to give there. I think one of them is going to end up transferring, to be honest with you, because all of them, fantastic quarterbacks who all proved themselves last season, all of them can't get equal playing time on the field. There's going to be one quarterback.
Got enough to beat Michigan next year at Ann Arbor?
Of course. I think it's good. I think it's unrealistic to expect that, you know, Jim Harbaugh to come in his first year. I think it's unrealistic to expect Michigan is going to win a Big Ten title in his first year. Give Harbaugh some time here. Give him 2 to 3 years, I say. Next year, I think Michigan State is certainly going to have the upper hand against Michigan. But you can't expect Jim Harbaugh to come in. It's just going to be just magic in the first season, Ray.
Brady Hoke did it in the first year, but after that, he fell apart. So I don't know. You never know from year to year, because the year Brady Hoke won, they won three or four games on the last play of the game, practically.
That's true. All right, Ray, we got to move on, friend. Buddy. Thanks a lot for the call. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. It is Tuesday, each and every Tuesday here on Current Sports. We love to bring you a segment entitled Top 5 Tuesday. You know, the top 5 quarterbacks in Michigan State football history. We've done the top 5 point guards in NBA history. We've done so many top 5 topics except we got a brand new one for you today. With the draft lottery, the NBA draft lottery, taking place tonight at 8:30 p.m. on ESPN, one of my favorite events in all of sports. It's always intense. You never know what's going to happen. There's always a surprise here and there with each and every draft lottery. So bringing a more local feel, bringing it to my Detroit Pistons, what exactly must the Detroit Pistons address in the offseason to ensure that they are a playoff contending team next year? Here we go. It is time for Top 5 Tuesday. All right, folks, again, the NBA Draft Lottery takes place tonight at 8:30 p.m. on ESPN. Isaac, do you like the Draft Lottery? I always think it's pretty entertaining.
I love it, and there are all these critics of the lottery. I think it's a decent system. I think it prevents teams from totally tanking and expecting to get the number one pick. Obviously, teams still tank. I mean,
exactly. Well, the reason why they do tank is because, yeah, it tries to battle that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's interesting because for those that don't know, you know, how the draft lottery goes, again, what do you have? You know, you have every single team, I think, that didn't make the playoffs, usually in attendance for this event. They have you know, representative from that respective team. And, you know, it's pretty interesting the way it goes. Now, looking at the teams this year, of course, you got the Timberwolves, you got the New York Knicks, Sixers, Lakers, the Magic, Kings, Nuggets, Pistons, Hornets, Heat, Pacers, Jazz, Suns, and Thunder. Now, when looking at it, Isaac, again, you know, the 14 number balls are placed in a hopper, and each team is assigned its designated percentage of possible four-digit combinations. Now, again, four numbers are drawn, and the team whose numbers correspond to that four-number combination wins the number one pick. And the process is then repeated for number two, number three. The remaining picks, numbers 4 through 14, proceed in order from worst to best record. So I do think at the end of the day, when you just mentioned, again, it tries to combat the issue of tanking in the NBA. But at the end of the day, I mean, the team with the worst record in the NBA gets the most number balls, I believe, in the hopper. Is that right?
Well, with that being said, though, the team with the number one chance usually does not win because it's
right.
Only a 25% chance.
Yep.
Historically, the most likely team to, and here's probability for you. This is what's great about the NBA lottery. Historically, the team that wins the lottery the most is actually the fourth team. The
wow.
team with the fourth probability.
Interesting. So in that case, that would be the Los Angeles Lakers this year, who have an 11.9% of winning this year's draft lottery. I believe it goes Timberwolves have a 25% chance, the Knicks with a 19.9% chance, the Philadelphia 76ers with a 15.6% chance, and the Lakers with an 11.9% chance. And how crazy would that be if the Lakers, a team who certainly has lost, and I never thought I'd be saying this, but they have lost that crown of being the best NBA team in Los Angeles to, of course, the LA Clippers, who were eliminated in the Western Conference quarterfinals to the Houston Rockets. But, I mean, it would be big for the L.A. Lakers if they do get one of those top three picks and will possibly be back on the map. Again, with Kobe Bryant coming back. Now, again, I think Kobe's old. I don't think he'll be. His effectiveness is dwindling year after year after year in the NBA. But if they get one of those top three picks and are able to get a guy like a Karl Anthony Towns or a Jahlil Okafor, two guys who I think will go number one and two in this year's NBA draft, hey, that could be a franchise changer. Who knows?
Wow, the beauty of being that bad, too, is that you can draft any position. You really can. So the Lakers can draft Jahlil Okafor.
Mm-hmm.
They can, of course, draft Karl Anthony Towns out of Kentucky. They can draft Emmanuel Mudiay, or they can draft D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State.
Right.
All of them will dramatically improve that team, and
I think anything would. I think me suiting up in the LA Lakers jersey would dramatically improve that team, Isaac.
I wouldn't argue with that.
without a doubt. Now, to bring a more local feel to this thing, of course, I want to talk about the Detroit Pistons, who actually have a 2.8% chance in winning one of those top three or four spots in this year's, tonight's NBA draft lottery. So, again, Top 5 Tuesday, what exactly are the top five needs for this Detroit Pistons team? I'll let you start this thing off, Isaac. What's your number five?
Well, my number five, I think the Pistons, whether they get Stanley Johnson, who, of course, is my favorite for the Pistons draft.
Stanley Johnson.
Out of Arizona. Okay. I love him. He's not as bad of a shooter as people think. I think he's got incredible potential because of his athleticism, his youth. I really am just crazy about the kid. I think he's got a lot of potential as a perimeter defender as well. But I think they need some youth at the small forward. When you look at the Pistons at the three, they've got Caron Butler, who's an old man, Tayshaun Prince, who they got for tradition's sake, for memory's sake.
Mm-hmm. And right.
Yeah, I think the Pistons need a stronger small forward, but I think they also need a small forward that can grow with the team. I also think that could involve converting Kentavious Caldwell-Pope into a small forward. I think it all depends.
I truly think that when you look at this Detroit Pistons team, Isaac, I don't think they're that far away to being a legitimate playoff contender in the Eastern Conference, which isn't great every year in the NBA, to be honest, when you look at the East compared to the Western Conference. Number five for me, with that being said, I don't think that they have to knock out a home run in this year's NBA draft. I really don't. So number five for me, I'm going with a different feel here. I truly think that Reggie Jackson just needs an offseason with Stan Van Gundy. That's my number five. Reggie Jackson having a full offseason with Stan Van Gundy and that coaching staff, assistant coaching staff, that includes Tim Hardaway, Mr. Crossover, who was a fantastic guard throughout his time and tenure in the NBA. If Reggie Jackson gets a legit offseason to work with that coaching staff, getting a chance to also play with his teammates and develop some form of chemistry, I think that he can really manhandle that guard position and evolve into the point guard that Stan Van, or the guard in general, that Stan Van Gundy is looking to produce for this team. I think that Reggie Jackson, he showed signs of it near the end of last year, but he came in such a sporadic position. I mean, getting, you know, it, right during that that NBA trade deadline, he comes in and has to move into a position. I mean, that's tough for any player to automatically come to a team and gel. So watch out for Reggie Jackson. Number four, what's your number four, Isaac?
Well, my number four, I have just some luck in the lottery. It always helps because we talked about it, these are bouncing ping pong balls. There's no telling how they fall.
Right.
So if the Pistons can get some luck in the lottery, I think any pick in the top four this year, and the Pistons, because of the way the lottery is structured, only have a chance at the number three or below pick, or pick in their general area, which is, of course, eighth. So I think the Pistons, just if they get a pick in the top three, wow, that could turn this franchise around.
Yeah, certainly. Number four for me, I'm kind of going on the same notion as your number five, Isaac. I think that the Pistons need a stretch forward, a guy who can not only affect things in the paint. And I think the big question here that we have yet to address is whether or not Greg Monroe will be a Detroit Piston next season. That's the big question here, because then knowing what Greg Monroe is going to do in the offseason, if he takes a free agent deal, if a team offers him big money and he decides to leave the team, which I think is the only reason that Greg Monroe will leave the team for more moolah. If a team doesn't do that out there, he will be a Detroit Piston next year, and I think you can work around knowing that. But right now, not knowing what Greg Monroe will do, I think you need to stretch forward a guy who can come in, who can possibly replace Greg Monroe, who can be an inside presence but also an outside presence, who can stretch the defense. Because the Pistons, once Kyle Singler and DJ Augustine left that team, their shooting just went, it honestly plummeted. They went from one of the league's best three-point shooting teams to among the middle of the pack, near the worst as the season went on. So I think it would be great to get a stretch forward. I don't know how many stretch forwards out there would be applicable to that situation in Detroit, though, in this year's draft.
Well, I think my number three, perfect transition, thank you for that, is a really good power forward. I don't think Greg Monroe's the guy in Detroit. I think he's too slow of a player, just his style. I think it's kind of a hodgepodge of styles when you've got Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond on the same team. That does not make any sense to me. So I think the Pistons need a new power forward and a better power forward. and I think that's my number three.
Number three for me, shooting. I kind of hit it on that with my number four. I think Detroit needs a sharpshooter, and I'm seeing a few names here thrown around. Maybe Croatian gunner Mario Hezonja. Have you heard of him at all, Isaac?
I have. I think
he's
one of the better foreign prospects recently, actually.
Yeah, 6'8" player. You're talking about a stretch four who I think could fit perfectly with the Stan Van Gundy mode. He's developed more of an all-around floor game. His defense is suspect. That is a knock on him. And that kind of is an easy transition into my number two. I think the Pistons have to improve defensively. They give up way too many points in the paint. And it blows my mind when I say that, because you would think when you have two big guys down low, like a Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond, that they would cause havoc down there, that you wouldn't be able to get easy layups down there. But I just think that Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe, they just, when they do play an opposition that has a stretch forward, it allows Greg Monroe to not be a factor down low, and you just have Andre Drummond down there. And guards just come up in there and just get easy layups off of him. I just can't believe that. So they have to improve defensively. That's my number two.
Well, I think the bigger problem defensively first is that Greg Monroe is not a great help defender.
He's
so
not.
Whenever Andre Drummond is occupied, Monroe is useless. Monroe is a really good post defender when it's one-on-one, a basic throwback power forward in the post. But I think the bigger problem is actually just the lack of help defense when Drummond's occupied. But my number two is a clear direction for the franchise, because I think that gets a little bit confused when you have both Reggie Jackson and Brandon Jennings. Of course, Reggie Jackson left the Thunder because he was unhappy with playing time. That was his big gripe. So how would he respond if Brandon Jennings, again, takes that starting point guard spot? I don't know. I think you need to side with one, or try to convert one into a two guard. So, and then I think Drummond is a cornerstone for this franchise for years to come. You've got to just find a way to keep him happy and keep him around.
Exactly. And, you know, hey, I think you were probably reading my notes before the show here, Isaac. That's my number one, whether or not, Brandon Jennings and Reggie Jackson, whether or not those two players can play efficiently and effectively together, because they are two hardcore personalities out there on the basketball court. Somebody's going to have to take a back seat. Brandon Jennings is a scoring juggernaut, but he also found a way to get others involved. Before that ACL injury, he was one of the top five guards in the NBA, in my eyes. Reggie Jackson, you know, you saw left and right for him, again, on the heels of last year, that he started to get it. He started to find a way to balance his scoring while also getting others involved. I don't know if both of those two can play together. Stan Van Gundy is going to have to work some magic. Folks, again, if you want to weigh in on exactly what the Pistons need looking at next year's team and predictions on what will happen tonight in the NBA draft lottery, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at Al Martin WKR. Really quickly here, Isaac, what pick do the Pistons get tonight in tonight's NBA draft lottery?
Well, even quicker, my number one is just handing the direction of the franchise totally over to Stan Van Gundy.
Right, exactly.
But yeah. I think the Pistons wind up with the 8th pick in the draft. I mean, the most likely probability is the pick they're assigned, so that's what I'm going with.
I'm going with number 8, too. Were you looking at my notes, dude? Is there a camera here behind the glass here, Isaac? It's crazy. Yeah, I have them going with the number 8 pick in the NBA draft as well. Number one, numero uno, I am going to say, if I had to choose, let's see here. I'm going to go with the Philadelphia 76ers.
I think the Timberwolves. Okay. I think this is the year.
All right. We will finally see. All right, folks. Well, we unfortunately are out of time. I want to give a special shout out and thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic Tuesday, and be easy, people.